Hello, and welcome to Two Pre-Sales in a Pod, your authentic global voice for the pre-sales and buyer enablement world. And we have some fun along the way too. So thanks for joining us, and don't forget to find out our top tips on today's topic at the end.
Hello, and welcome to episode 70 of Two Pre-Sales in a Pod. And you're joined by myself. I'm a lone P in the pod today, so Adam Freeman and the wonderful Peter Cohen. Peter, thank you for joining me.
Truly my pleasure. Good to be a podster.
Good. So it's a very intimate chat about a topic close to your heart, which is discovery. And we see so much banded around LinkedIn about discovery, what makes great discovery, what doesn't make great discovery, and so many other things around it that we thought, actually, we're going to start with a very, very simple question here. One posed by Peter, which is, when do you know enough is enough in terms of discovery? And I thought it's been kicking around in my head since Peter came up some topics for us to discuss today. And I thought, actually, how do you know when enough discovery is enough, Peter? So that's our opening question, right? What's your thoughts on that?
So this is probably one of the single most important topics in discovery. And let me answer this in the form of a small dialogue and story. So imagine, Adam, you have had what you think is the flu for the past 7 days. You've got a fever, you don't feel good. If you're like me, it takes you forever to actually go and see a doctor, but you finally decided, or your wife said, you know what, Adam, you need to go see a doctor. So you go to doctor number one, hospital number one, and you present, and I will be doctor number one. You present to me and you say, I think I have the flu. So go ahead.
Oh, you have the flu, Peter.
No, you say, you're the patient. Let's try this again. You feel bad that you go into the hospital. I'm a doctor, and you tell me as a doctor, I think I may have the flu.
I think I've got the flu, and it's definitely man flu.
Okay, and I'm doctor number one. I say, you know what? It's been going around. Everybody has it. I understand you work at the access, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to write you a prescription for a powerful new flu drug called Fluvigon, and I write that prescription. And I hand it to you here through the miracle of the internet. Go ahead and grab that.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Yeah.
Okay, start taking those pills and you should start feeling better in about 2 to 3 days. Now, two questions. Number one, how did you feel about that interaction? And number two, what's the likelihood you would actually get those pills and start taking them?
Well, number one, I'm probably glad I'm in the UK because it could be expensive with an experimental drug, much more than the US. But no, I felt... Yeah, I didn't really go through my symptoms with you, did I? I just kind of took the pills and I've got to go take them, right? So I'm trusting that you have diagnosed me correctly and that these pills are going to solve the pain.
By the way, you, this is a podcast and you can't see this, but Adam's body language is decidedly uncomfortable. It's perfect.
I don't know what you're going to ask me next.
Well, so, okay, fair. So you're uncomfortable as a patient and you think, you know what, I'm just not sure about this. You go across town to hospital number two, doctor number two, and you present and you say exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Doctor number two, I feel like I may well have the flu.
And I'm doctor number two and I say, yeah, it's been going around, but how long have you had it?
Oh, it feels like it's been forever, but it's only been 2 days.
It's only 2 days. Are you running a fever? A temperature?
Yes, I think so.
How high?
I don't know. Is that Fahrenheit or Celsius? I don't know. In Celsius, maybe like 40.
40. Okay, that's pretty significant, actually.
Yeah, that's quite a lot.
any sweats, chills, aches, pains?
Lots.
Nausea?
No.
Okay, good. So you're not pregnant. That's good to know. So we go on for another 10 doctor minutes, which anybody that's ever been in an examination room knows that's a long time. At the end of that 10 minutes of questions, of diagnostic questions, doctor number two writes a prescription for exactly the same med, Fluvigon. Now, same two questions. How did you feel about the interaction? And what's the likelihood you'd buy that and start taking the pills?
To answer number two first, I take the pills because I felt listened to and that you'd understood my symptoms and therefore I felt the risk of you misdiagnosing me was reduced. So therefore I felt more comfortable, yeah.
So we've now just answered the question, how much discovery is enough?
Mm.
Because one way to describe this is discovery is sufficient when both parties feel comfortable with the outcome. So when the vendor has sufficient information to propose a precise solution is part one. That's the vendor's perspective, or should be. And part two is when the prospect feels that the vendor has sufficient information to propose a precise solution. So that's a perspective that I try to encourage people to understand. It's not just I, the vendor, need, you know, the parameters that I need to be able to provide a price and an implementation understanding and so forth. The prospect has to feel comfortable that you've asked enough, you've plumbed enough about their situation to be in a position to actually propose a solution.
I suppose this is a hard thing to quantify because every person's assessment of what enough is enough is going to be relevant to their experience. Like we spoke a couple of weeks ago on the last podcast episode with Lydia about various routes into pre-sales. I suppose if you've come from a very product or technical background and you're a little bit, maybe I'm stereotyping here, but a little bit more introvert, where actually that interaction that discovery brings, you're not as comfortable there as you are when you're building the system. You kind of want to get in and out and do as little as possible to get to a point of building the system, because that's the bit of the job you enjoy, right? If you're like myself, I'm a little bit more extrovert, I enjoy the human interaction, I'd rather spend as little time as possible building and as much time doing discovery and, you know, and interacting with that and building the relationship with the customer. So actually I would probably go to the side of I'm probably doing too much discovery at times if I look back over my career. But that's what gave me the comfort that I knew the customer enough, not just the solution, but the person behind it, right? So I'm going to ask you this question in a slightly different way here, Peter. We're asking about what discovery is enough. You use the doctor's analogy. What about the discovery from the point of view of the relationship? Because in that example of the doctor and the patient, there was a level of trust that was exchanged there as well, right? So how do you kind of assess, or when you look back over your career, how do you assess that the trust in the relationship has got to a place where the discovery is sufficient? You've got enough to build the demo, but you feel that the relationship needs that work. Do you keep going at that point?
So I'm going to say definitely yes. And one way of exploring this is to remember that the more complicated the offering or more complex the solution, likely the more discovery is going to be needed. So, you know, you could almost say that that's a linear relationship. Let me tell you another mini story. So way back when I was a product manager, but I spent an enormous amount of time out doing demos with the Salesforce. There's actually two stories here, but I was out in the field with a woman named Carol Frischman, who was one of the strongest and best sales reps for this company.
She's not going to sue us for you using her name, right?
No. Okay. This is all good. This is all good.
We have no legal department here at Two Pre-Sales. Yeah. So.
Carol the Fridge. She's famous, locally famous. We were at a pharma house in North Carolina, and we were talking about, basically small molecule pharmaceuticals and discovery of these entities. And we had systems that supported the processes of doing this. And we were in a discovery conversation with a group of medicinal chemists. And she asked them, she said, walk me through your workflow, what you guys are doing for your particular types of chemistry. And I looked at her sharply in the meeting because I thought, you already know this, don't you know? And later that evening in the restaurant, I raised that question. I said, why did you ask these guys about to tell you the workflow that you were already deeply intimate with? And she said, I am intimate with that workflow, but I need them to feel that they have told me their specific flavor of that workflow. And that's, and she actually said, this is a very important element to building up the relationship. She introduced me to the curse of knowledge. She said, you know, just because you know something doesn't mean that you don't need to ask the questions, sort of a slightly different flavor of the curse of knowledge. Mm-hmm. The prospect needs to feel heard. And Adam, you said that beautifully in the our diagnosis example. So, you know, building a relationship is a huge part of it. I'm going to give a different example, and this has to do with cultural attributes. So when you're doing discovery, most of us are talking about features and functions and numbers. You know, how many people, how often, blah, 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 blah. Here's a really interesting couple of questions. Dear prospect, what is your organization or your department's appetite for change? About that. Are you an organization that embraces it? You know, for example, when was the last time you guys actually implemented a major software system? Mm. Because if the answer is, oh, we're doing something new every year. Well, these guys have a terrific appetite for change. They'll understand the processes. They'll probably forgive any mistakes that go along the way, et cetera. On the other hand, if they say, well, it's been 7 years since any major system went in, and in fact, most of the stuff we're using is still a green screen, that's a totally different scenario. And that gives you important information about an organization's culture.
Mm. And, that's one of the things when I came into pre-sales from consultancy, one of the challenges I had when we were doing discovery and demos was I almost wanted to get to a point of a complete system, because that was ingrained into me as a consultant and as an accountant before then, that you're either there or you're not. So, when I was delivering projects and taking customers live on new software platform, I couldn't get 60, 70% of the way there. It had to be 100% ready. And I found very early in my pre-sales career, I haven't got time. The customer hasn't got time to achieve that goal. That's an unrealistic place to be. And I learned very, very quickly, and I had some great, great salespeople that helped me realize this. You know, you've got to demo and you've got to discover and you've got to do these steps to the point that actually it's for the customer to have confidence that they're prepared to put, well, it was pen on paper back when I started, but fingerprint on DocuSign or whatever you're using now. It's at what point is the customer comfortable to take that step? And that's very rarely 100% finished solution with everything shown. Having said that, I've had some customers that had we not have got to that place, would they have signed up? I don't know. And then you've got a choice of a vendor to say, well, actually the cost on the deal, the CAC, as you would call it in software terms, the CAC's too high. Mm-hmm. The value of the deal can't support us building a 100% system because you're into proof of concept territory and therefore there's chargeable activities. So I suppose if I see this question then, discovery versus POCs, is there a fine line between the two?
Oh, interesting. Well, a POC is a proof element. I mean, and discovery should, how do I want to phrase this? Discovery should align what needs to be proven. That which must be demonstrated. I don't remember the actual Latin. Let's go sideways back to your original question, because I think one of the challenges with doing discovery and how much is enough is the perspective of the job title. So salespeople's first mode of discovery is, I need to collect enough information so that I can put together a price proposal, which means I need to know, which modules, how many users, how long, what databases does this person want, and so forth. So there's a mindset towards, what information do I need to collect to be able to provide them with an accurate proposal and price? Pre-sales people are thinking often in terms of what you just said. What do I need to know in order to A, deliver a demo, or B, set up and execute a POC or POV? Interestingly, if you talk to implementation people, you're going to get another perspective, which is, what do we need to learn to be able to actually implement properly? What alerts do they want to set up? What new fields do they want in this database? What customizations are they contemplating? Customer success people have another angle, which is, well, what do we need to do to make sure that we're going to secure a renewal?
Yeah.
I'm also compensated by expansion. What do we need to do to begin to grow this and develop this this account over time? So, and by the way, none of these are the prospect's perspective, which is, what do I need to be successful to achieve my objectives? all of these need to be brought together as a, I think, and that's what doing discovery book is trying to suggest, as a whole, so that when you're saying how much discovery is enough, you're actually taking into account all of those different perspectives. Mm. Thoughts on that?
I think the thought that you kick off when we originally, you know, kind of thought about this podcast episode, you and I, Mark, we kicked around some questions that we would ask. This was the one for me that stuck out, because I think as you get more experience in pre-sales, you start to tread a fine line between enough and not enough, because the curse of knowledge sets in as a pre-sales professional. You assume, and knowledge becomes the enemy of discovery, because you assume that customer with that profile, yeah, I get you making that point, but you don't need to make it because I know exactly how this process flow is going to work. I can configure this. You leave that with me. And I've heard people say this. I've heard different people in different areas of software say this. Don't you worry. You leave that with me and I can demo that back to you. But the customer's not asking to be demoed to, right? They're asking to be heard at that point. And I think what I'd provoke all of us listening, we normally do golden takeaways at the end, but I'd kind of introduce one here, is just have a think about a recent deal that you've done that maybe involved discovery and think, actually, did I go too far? Did I ask too much? Did I take too much time out of that prospect's day? Because everyone's so busy. Everyone's busy. Could I have cut that down? Did I do enough? Should I have done more? Should I have maybe let the salesperson do part of the discovery and then me stepped in? Which is kind of taking us to our second question, really, which is, you know, if we think about the quantity of discovery with the start of the show, and we're going to get onto disco demos later, right? So if you're kind of losing us at this point, stay with us, because this is a really important point. Uh-huh. I'm going to ask you about the quality. So we've done quantity. Let's move to quality. What do you do if you're a pre-sales person and your salesperson comes to you and says, hey, Peter, done this great discovery with this prospect. Wow, like they are a great fit for our software. Here's all my discovery notes. And you look at them and you have a significant doubt over the quality of the discovery that's been done.
So give me an example.
So you look at it and let's say that the notes on surface level look good. Okay, they've tackled a lot of the big areas you expect, and you think, yeah, I could turn this into a demo. And you look at the attendee list. And let's say the FD was missing, or a significant, what you would deem a significant functional stakeholder wasn't there, therefore hasn't been heard, and is going to be present in the demo. Let's say you have doubts from that perspective of the completeness of the discovery, okay, therefore the quality. What would you do in that point? Would you go back and redo it? Would you say to the salesperson, hey, this isn't great, we can't do this, or do you go ahead?
So it's definitely going to be situational. However, I'm going to give the advice of my old Swiss boss. So when I was posted to Switzerland, Hans Rudi's favorite expression, head of sales for Europe, his favorite expression was, we need more information. That was his favorite expression. And I think that's the watch phrase for situations like this. You know, if you know that something is missing, it should be our responsibility as pre-sales or sales or customer success. If something critical is missing, we should call it out. That's part of our job. You know, if the financial director has not been interviewed or whatsoever. And you know that that's an important element in making the sale and enabling the buying process, then you should call it out. Yeah. I think more typically what we see are notes from our colleagues that have uncovered pain, and they've said the timing is they need it right away and we need a demo. And what we try to teach is that you need to go a lot further than that. Simply uncovering pain is insufficient. And a simple example, well, you know, we we will live with the hell that we know forever unless it is attached to a goal or objective that is at risk. My younger daughter has been torturing herself with trying to buy some furniture. And if you ask her, why have you not bought this sofa? She says, well, you know, the futon that I'm using is okay. And I just don't want to make a bad decision. She doesn't want to take the risk of doing the wrong thing. So my prediction is she may never actually buy a new sofa.
No, that's not the outcome. You know, it's not. Dad, Can you please buy me a sofa is the outcome we're looking for here.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. That's true. I hadn't even thought of it that way. I missed the cue there. Anyway.
Yeah.
But the point is, she's not in pain sufficiently. She's got a desire. She'd like to improve her situation, but it's not attached to a goal or objective. You know, perhaps if she was doing some kind of important gathering where she really needs to show up her place, and I'm just, this is a ridiculous example, but, and she had a deadline where that had to be done, then she might actually go out and pull the trigger and buy a sofa and then, you know, be happy with it, would live with it. But that's a perfect example when you map it to the world of software sales. Our salesperson says, let's say it's a CRM system that we're selling. CRM system salesperson says, hey, we've uncovered the pain. This is a head of sales we're talking to. And she says, you know, we need more and better leads. Mm. Well, is that a pain that's sufficient to drive a sale? And I will suggest only if that pain is impacting her ability to make her annual and quarterly numbers. Mm. If it's not, if she's making her numbers, she's going to live, or she'll be willing to live with that insufficiency of leads forever.
Yeah. And I think this is a really important point, right? Because quality often trumps quantity when it comes to this together, I would suggest, because if you can prove that pain and show that pain and understand that pain deeply in a few areas, as humans, we're so wired up naturally to avoid the risk of loss. You know, since cave person times, when we lived in caves, we ran around protecting ourselves from things that could harm us. And it's ingrained into our brains that, hey, protect what you've got, protect everything you've got. Don't go and chase that thing that's a little bit kind of adventurous and risky to go and chase again. We're wired up to protect against losses. And so when a customer's doing discovery, part of it is that, right? If I stay on this system that I know, I might not love it. It might not do everything I want. But guess what? It's probably less risky than moving to a new system that's going to have new problems, right? So I always think actually diving into some of those real important pain points very, very deeply and understanding them earns you potentially the right to a second conversation. And some of the deals that I've won over my career, if I think back and think, if you said to me, like, what was a deal you were really proud of? I can think of one in my head where we didn't have access to a lot of time with the prospect to do discovery. We had a very short amount of time, and I worked in manufacturing software. Very kind of hard to model the whole manufacturing process. So what we did was because we didn't have a lot of time and they wanted to look at a lot of vendors, we just focused on a very small part of the process that they had a particular problem with. We deeply understood that part, demonstrated around that part, proved the value, which earned us the right to a secondary discovery conversation. And they go, okay, you've proven that bit. I'm now going to commit a full day, 2 days, 4 days, whatever the amount of time was, to really let you have access to all of our people, all of our factory, you know, all of our processes, and then demo the full system. So you were earning the right to a second conversation because it protected both parties. On one side, I'm thinking, I don't want to spend days and days and days if you're looking at all these vendors and it's not going to be us, but I also don't want to waste your time, and they didn't want to waste their time, right?
You know what you did? You just backed into a vision generation demo of sorts.
Is that what I did?
Yeah. And another way of phrasing this is, and don't try this at home, but how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time.
Yeah.
The elephants don't approve of this process at all, so don't try it. But, you know, for large, complex systems and scenarios, one way to begin is to explore a critically important portion of it. Understand that, as you're saying, prove it out. Mm. And then you've earned the right to go further. I think that's a terrific approach. That's embedded in the concept of vision generation. Yeah.
But earning the right is important, and something that I know we've spoken about previously, because myself and Peter, we do actually speak outside of the podcast as well. You might think that we have this kind of back and forth and we get on. We do genuinely get on outside of the podcast. So one of the things I remember I've said to you previously was about how we used to prove the deal. Yeah. And I think it becomes almost an advanced skill in pre-sales to be able to put barriers in the way to see if somebody's really into this. Because from a prospect's point of view, do we do discovery for us as pre-sales people and software, or do we do it for the customer? And it's actually for both parties. And so I've never had a problem personally saying to a prospect, and I use an example with you of going, hey, guys, I can model this manufacturing process out, but I need you to do some work to help me understand that. I'm not going to sit here and you talk at me and I make all these notes and suddenly it merges. We've got to do this collaboratively. We've got to do this together. And I've had customers where they've gone, yeah, and they just don't get back to you and don't do it. And I've got to ask myself the question, were they ever really going to buy software if they couldn't articulate something that they knew? And I used to use things like, I need a little bit of your data. So can you, even if you anonymize it, I get that this is your competitive advantage. Can you anonymize some data and just fire it over to me, you know, within the next couple of days? So give a defined outcome and time frame. Some customers or prospects would never get you that data. And did they ever really go on to buy software? Probably not.
This is a wonderful topic. This is an artifact of organizations not discriminating or differentiating between people that are just browsing. In other words, people that are just trying to understand what's possible, what's out there, is this a project I might want to pursue, versus people who are truly in an active buying process, who have a project, they're moving down a pathway. And I'm always astounded by how many, well, it's a happy ears syndrome, how many sales teams, the moment that a prospect reaches out and, you know, accepts a call, for example, there's an assumption that they're in an active buying process, when in fact, many aren't. And this is one of the major reasons for no decision outcomes. You know, 45% of all projects that are forecasted to close go nowhere. Mm-hmm. So a simple question early in the dialogue, and not a BDR SDR question, like, is this, you know, the are you the decision maker? Is this an active project? Do you have a budget, et cetera? But a more gentle question of, you know, are you just in the process of exploring? Or is this something where you really, you know, we really should be digging in? Because if you're just exploring, I'm more than happy to give you an overview, to give you, you know, a little bit of a demo so you can see what's possible for the future. Happy to do that, invest mutually that few minutes. On the other hand, you know, if this is really something you want to pursue, you know, let's set up a time and talk. Mm-hmm. Here's something that I believe is very, very true. People that are in an active buying process, even though they're cautious at the beginning of a discussion or a conversation, actually want to be discovered. They want to be discovered. When people reach out to me and say, hey, I'm seriously interested, or I'm interested in demo skills, workshop training, and I say, terrific, should we schedule a time to go through your situation? There's two possible answers. One is they say, absolutely, let's set up a time. And we'll spend an hour to 2 hours or more going through the details. On the other hand, they may say, no, just send me some information. That's it. I know they're not yet in an active buying process. It's not important enough for them. And it's a very simple way to discriminate. There's a question I love to ask at the end of, this is a cultural question too, at the end of a discovery conversation, my favorite question, when I've completed my list, which is a document that I use to give me a structured approach to know that I've covered all the things that I should be covering and the prospect wants me to cover in terms of questions, I ask, hey, is there anything I haven't asked that I should be asking?
Right.
You get two sets of answers. But what you just did, and the audience, you can't see this, but he just did a classic, thoughtful look.
Well, the reason why, when I used to finish, I used to say things like, okay, If I got to the end and it was fairly surface level discovery, and anyone who's been in pre-sales any amount of time will know that, where you've kind of hit on things that 90% of your prospects will say, and you still go through it and you listen and you go, never heard that before. That's a great point. You use all those kind of feedback words, right? And you get to the end, you think, I've not really got a real challenge to get my teeth into here, but there is reason to change. I get all that. I used to say, what three things do you wish your current systems did for you? Now, what three things can you not do right now that you'd love to be able to do as a business? What would change your world to be able to do something? And I used to ask it in a negative mindset because it used to make people really think and it used to make them prioritize. So I used to always say three. I say, give me your top three. And you'd have different people around the table and you'd get some really brilliant answers that were so simple. I'd love an alert that just told me this. And you got into what that gave you was how they worked, not what they worked on. And I often found that was a bigger change. It was the, I don't want to be stuck at my desk all day, Adam. I want to be around the factory. I want information where I am, where I am. It was nothing to do with the process. It was delivery of information. And sometimes you wouldn't get that in discovery. You get the mechanics of how they work, not maybe where they wanted to work. I was just thinking out loud, when you said you had a document with all your questions in, would you share that? And would you do that collaboratively with the customer? Would they be collaborative notes or would you keep them private?
It is a collaborative effort. There are many times where I'll be over to like Zoom and I'll share screen and I will put together this construct we call a situation slide. Mm-hmm. And so I have their job title on it and their industry. And then I go through the conversation. We actually build these out together. What top level challenge are you seeking to address? Talk through your pain points. What are the problems? What specific capabilities are you looking for in a solution? Let's talk about the value. What kind of tangible gains are you looking for? So I'll type it in as they are articulating. They correct, they expand. I love this approach because it shouldn't be a we they thing.
Yeah.
If we're going to be coming together to try to put together a solution and implement it, it should be truly an us thing.
What's great about that approach when you do collaborative notes, if they use a particular terminology relevant to that organization, say, oh yeah, but we call it this, they'll use an acronym, they'll give you the full word because you're typing out quite a long thing, like, yeah, we call it this. So it might be a report name or something that they think is unique to them. And you'll start to get their vocabulary when you make collaborative notes, I think. I just want to move on. We're kind of approaching the end, but there's a topic I really, really want to come forward with you because we read so much about it on LinkedIn. And I think there seems to be this camp of it's great or it's not. And it's the disco demo. And if you don't know what a disco demo is, maybe we should define that first, right? But Peter, do you want to define in your eyes what a disco demo is?
You want the cynical definition?
Whichever one we can broadcast.
A disco demo in theory is the confluence of doing a demo for a prospect and simultaneously doing discovery. I'm going to suggest that doing adequate discovery, with a few exceptions, while you're doing a demo is physically impossible.
Do you know the reason I'm bringing this point up is because scrolling through LinkedIn, I've added this to the end of this episode, I saw consecutive posts, one person in the industry saying, disco demos are great, they give you this great tool, blah, 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 followed by the next post, which was, you should not do disco demos, you should go back to discovery. And I thought, where do people sit when they're getting such conflicting advice? But you made a really good point about actually it's relevant to the type of deal cycle you're in, correct?
Yeah. So where are they appropriate? They're appropriate for the brief disco demos are in fact another way of articulating a vision generation demo, which the demo portion of which should probably be no more than two or three or four screens. And a great way to, I was just thinking about this for our call today, a great way to introduce a disco demo of that form or a vision generation demo would be that, well, Adam, Monday morning, What screens or what reports do you look at on Monday morning to see where, you know, what's going on with your business for the week? What two or three or four screens reports do you look at or would you like to look at if you could?
Yeah, well, it's my vital stats for my pre-sales. Everyone knows I love KPIs, right? So it'd be embarrassing if I don't know where to look. But I have my KPIs for the team, month to date, where are we, year to date, and I know what's working and what isn't.
Okay, perfect. And if this was if we were doing a demonstration of one of Vivin's tools or Home Run or one of the other pre-sales tools, and you were using Excel, I would at this point say, would you like to see an example or two of what I think you've been trying to put together in Excel in our offering? You'd say yes, please, and I'd show you the vital signs, the KPIs for those two or three. Will be like two or three software screens. That's vision generation. Mm-hmm. Just enough to satisfy Adam's desire to see what's possible in the offering, and then to enable us to actually go into a real discovery conversation. So that's the way I would say a disco demo should be run. It's a vision generation demo. Sadly, I would say we could look at the numbers, but I would guess that 99% or more of what people phrase as disco demos are simply traditional overview demos.
Yes.
Where you move the mouse for a few moments or a minute or two or three, and then you ask, is this something that looks interesting to you?
But I'm on this side of, right? I think they work really, really well for some of these kind of high velocity deal cycles where the solution is the solution. There's less configurability. Okay, there might be an online solution. You know, some of the new AI tools are coming out. They work the way they work, and that's brilliant. And what you need to do is show people a new way of working to live with these tools in their best use case. Some of the background, I mean, you're from a science kind of science lab kind of background. I'm from manufacturing. You could never do that with parts of those software because it's so configurable and so bespoke. And you're further towards the enterprise level of solutions where there's a, you know, people are paying for that kind of white glove treatment of something tailored to them. A disco demo is actually a really dangerous thing because it looks like you've pre-templated a solution. They have to fit that, which you don't want to come across as being right. So I don't think there's a right and wrong on this. I just think they've got to be used purposefully in the right scenario. Yeah.
So I agree. I did an article not too long ago called Discovery on the Fly, and I would welcome people to take a look at that. It's on our website at greatdemo.com in the article section and comment. But one of the areas of, as you were saying, pragmatic use for disco demos are for the highly transactional sales projects, if you will. That's where they make that type of demo make sense. Both parties don't have a lot of time. It's a way of as you say, of communicating fairly rapidly. But the solution space is tightly bounded. It's not complex.
So we're wrapping up here very, very quickly. I just want to do a couple of shout outs. Firstly, just to say thank you, Peter, for coming on, sharing your knowledge and wisdom in this area. Peter does have a book out. So Peter, where can people get your book?
They can get both of my books. There's Doing Discovery on Amazon in the three popular formats, and the third edition of Great Demo was just released in this last month, effectively, and it's also available on Amazon, so paperback, Kindle, and audiobook formats. And
brilliant.
It's always a delight to have these conversations with Adam and the team.
You may recognize one of the forewords as well, which I put a lot of effort into crafting, and that counts me as a published author, I reckon, now doing your foreword for your book. But now I can thoroughly, thoroughly recommend it. Finally, from me, just a bit of a call. You know, we're booking slots for people to come on the podcast. So if you've listened to it and you want to be part of this, come join us, hit the airwaves, talk about something you're passionate in, and give something back to the community. But Peter, from us, thank you so much for joining us again. For all of you listening, hope it was useful. Any comments, feedback, let us know and share it with your friends. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Two Pre-Sales in a Pod. We'd love to hear from you on LinkedIn.